Best-selling author Stephen McCauley is back with a new novel, You Only Call When You're in Trouble. It revolves around a man named Tom, whose boyfriend has just moved out, whose niece is in the middle of a Title IX investigation, and whose sister is preparing to invest all of her money into a wellness guru's retreat center, which just happens to be in Woodstock, New York. Stephen McCauley is the author of 7 previous novels, including the bestsellers My Ex-Life, The Object of My Affection, and Alternatives to Sex. He currently co-directs the creative writing program at Brandeis University. McCauley will be part of the Spencertown Academy's Festival of Books, celebrating its 19th season this Labor Day weekend. Stephen will speak at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, the 1st of September. You can find out more at SpencertownAcademy.org, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Stephen McCauley to the roundtable. Thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to have you on our program.
Thank you so much for having me back.
What brought you to this particular story and this trio of characters?
You know, I had lunch with a friend of mine, and we were talking about retirement planning, which is something that people of my generation tend to do at this phase of life. And she told me that her retirement planning had always been extremely complicated because she always assumed that she would have to take care of her sister as she aged. And I was very struck by this because I know her sister a little bit, and her sister is a very intelligent, capable, talented professional person. I wondered why such a person would need to be taken care of. And then I kind of realized that her sister was someone who was kind of completely immune to taking advice from anyone about anything, professionally, personally, etc. And also didn't necessarily seem to learn too much from her experiences. And that kind of got me thinking about what it would be like to have a sibling like that and to, you know, give them advice which was completely rejected and then be expected to take care of them. And that's kind of the dynamic between the brother and sister in this book, who, by the way, do not resemble the person I'm talking about in any way, shape, or form.
When you look at this, especially with Cecily being this incredible character, the Tom really is the center of the story.
Yeah, Tom is an architect. He is the older brother of Dorothy and is Cecily's uncle. And he's kind of the heart and soul of the book in a way. He is the person that everyone calls when they're in trouble. And when the book begins, he's come to a point in his life at which he's decided, you know, I've done this for long enough. I need to pursue my own professional ambitions while I still have a chance to do so. And so I've got to stop answering these calls. And of course, that's when the calls begin coming in again. And he is incapable of not responding to them.
In the sense of being incapable, not responding to them, there is that feeling because no children of his own, and because of the backstory of this character, because of the mother and the scattered past, falls on Tom to figure this all out.
Yeah, I mean, he's someone who has been made to feel, for complicated reasons, guilty and responsible for taking care of his sister and child. The sister is a single mother. And so, but he kind of falls in love with his niece. You know, he just, even as a baby, he says he picked her up and just felt this responsibility for her. And so that is kind of what he's been dealing with his whole life. And I feel as if right now we're in a moment culturally where there's not a whole lot of value put on kind of being a good citizen and working collaboratively with people for the well-being of others. And I wanted to create a character who is deeply invested in that. And although he makes a lot of sacrifices to do that, it comes with a lot of rewards for him as well.
What I loved about the character, my wife and I do not have children, but we have many nieces and nephews. You make Tom out to be just a really wonderful uncle.
You know, he's the uncle I wish I could be, but probably am not and will never be. He feels this tremendous responsibility for his niece and does it out of love. And among the sacrifices, he's made professional sacrifices for her, financial sacrifices, and even emotional sacrifices. He's gay, and his most recent boyfriend, left him because he said, "You know, I will never be the center of your life. Your niece will always be the center of your life." And he realizes that that is true.
When it comes to Cecily, who is the niece, do you, because it doesn't seem like she's really taking advantage of the situation. She's found someone who cares deeply about her and really has attached herself to someone who may be providing what she wasn't getting from her own parents.
Yeah, I mean, she has a very chaotic mother, to put it kindly. And so he's always been the de facto father, and he's been the stable person in her life. And when she needs something, she calls him. She doesn't, it's not really taking advantage of him. I think it's just that she knows that it gives him pleasure as well, even though it's complicated.
One of the complications in the story, especially with Cecily, is that she's going through a Title IX investigation as the story takes place. And that's really interesting because it has Cecily questioning a lot about herself, about what she's doing, what her future is, and also just the whole issue itself.
Yeah. You know, the original title of this novel was The Responsible Party. And that comes up in the book in many different ways. You know, Tom is responsible for his sister and his niece. And also, Cecily feels responsible for a misunderstanding that has emerged between her and one of her students. She's a college professor. And she's not guilty of what she's being accused of. But she feels that she bears some responsibility for not managing things differently. I changed the title because my editor said, "People don't want to read about responsible people. This does not sound like a fun novel to read." So we jointly came up with this title, "You Only Call When You're in Trouble," which kind of communicates some of the same thing. But you know, the question of Title IX investigations is very much, I've been teaching for 35 years, and is very much a factor in academia. So I wanted to explore that a little bit.
And what I thought was interesting, without giving too much away, this character, there is some questionable activity, and yet there is a side to the story, and you're sort of left thinking, okay, this is all very plausible that this could have happened without any real wrongdoing.
Yeah, I mean, it is currently in academia, you know, it's an atmosphere of heightened sensitivity to a lot of these issues. And this leads to a misunderstanding that threatens to derail Cecily's career and her personal life as well, her personal relationships. And she's a relatively young professor, and a student is very flatteringly interested in everything she says. And so she thinks it's kind of an intellectual investment that the student has in her. And then when it's a little bit too late, she realizes that there's also a kind of romantic attachment that the student has to her as well. And at that point, you know, things have gone off the rails a bit.
Stephen McCauley is our guest. The name of the new book is You Only Call When You're in Trouble. The book is published by Holt. You Only Call When You're in Trouble is an actual line in the book that comes later in the novel, and it does say a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we all have people in our lives who we feel, whether it's true or not, only call when they want something from us or when they want advice or, you know, they're having problems. And I suspect, even though I would like to think not, that there are people in my life that I call, you know, primarily at least when I'm in need of something from them, when I'm in some kind of trouble. Yeah, so and it carries with it like a little tone of resentment, like, "You only call when you're in trouble. I wish you would call more often about something happy." But as we've discussed, it also gives satisfaction to the receiver of the call because they can make a change in someone's life.
We have not yet talked about Dorothy, only sort of around the character, but Dorothy is the mother and also Tom's sister. And as you said, Dorothy has had a complicated life. It is not a straightforward life. And we sort of pick her up at a point where she's trying to get her act together, but everyone's sort of looking at it of, oh, well, we've seen this movie before.
Yeah. She has moved to Woodstock, New York, and she's bought kind of a giant white elephant of a building and has connected herself with a self-help author and intends to open up a little retreat center. It's kind of a meditation and personal growth sort of thing as they envision it. And everyone in her life is rolling their eyes that the businesses that she has opened before have been admirable in many ways, but she just doesn't follow through on the problems that emerge from them. And so tends to get herself enmeshed in lawsuits and bankruptcies and those kinds of things. And this is the expectation. You know, Tom, her brother, has hoped that she will invest her money wisely and safely and conservatively, and then she'll be able to coast through for the rest of her life. But that's not anything that is of interest to Dorothy.
Did you feel that Tom was trying to pick up some of the slack of Dorothy when it came to Cecily?
Yeah, he has tried to be the steady person. He's tried to be the person who can help fund her education. And there's a line in the book where he says he's, you know, she grew up in this somewhat chaotic childhood, mm-hmm. that he's tried to make up for all of the, you know, overflowing ashtrays and overheard conversations that Cecily has had to endure since childhood.
You wrote a beautiful line in the book as far as Cecily and Tom goes. Age was so unkind, it would be to her, assuming she got there, but now she felt a confusing resentment toward Tom. She didn't want his appearance to change, didn't want him to leave her behind as he skated into old age. She'd be left without him. He was the person she could fall back on. One day he'd be gone. I think we all have that person in our life that we feel that way about.
Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, I think I've noted in myself that I feel this kind of resentment toward people in my life as I see them getting older and, dealing with the problems that come with aging, which makes absolutely no sense because, you know, I myself am facing the same thing. And it's not like anyone can stop time. But I liked this idea of exploring Cecily's resentment about the fact that her uncle was inevitably going to be aging and leaving her behind.
And as far as her own growth, you really leave that out there of, okay, we've given her a lot of ingredients and we'll see what happens to her.
Yeah, and that's there's not many alternatives to that. I mean, ultimately, you've got to let someone make their own mistakes and you can be there to catch them when they fall. But finally, they have to make their own decisions. And at the end of the book, not to give anything away, not that it's a big, you know, it's not a thriller, but that, you know, she begins acting on her own and really taking her life into her own hands in a way that she hasn't quite up to this point. And so even though there's a little bit of ambiguity about what her fate really is, I think it's important for me. I love bringing characters to a point in their life where they make a decision and make a decisive move. And that's the important thing. It's not necessarily the outcome, because so often we don't know what the outcome is going to be from the decisions we make. But if we make a good faith decision, then to me, that seems like a satisfying move.
One of my favorite lines in the book has to do with Tom. As you mentioned, Tom is gay and his boyfriend has moved out a lot because of the many reasons having to do with the relationship with Cecily. And you write, Tom had learned that an important part of aging with dignity was pretending that you had no sex life and didn't want one. The public had grown used to open declarations of racism, the details of frequent mass shootings, gruesome images of gastric bypass surgery that played on TV for entertainment value. The one thing no one could stand to hear about was the sexual desire, never mind the sexual activity of someone in their 60s.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. It just sort of, it just occurred to me. But I think that's true. I think, you know, like people are living longer, obviously, and but nobody wants to hear about that, you know, and it's a little bit of a challenge even to write about it in this novel. And so, yeah, I think he says that kind of as a joke, but I think it's actually true.
Sure. What you also delve into is not only the problems that Tom is having in his relationship, but also Cecily with her relationship and sort of on again, off again, and the moving around and dealing with the investigation and all of this, that the problems that she has with her boyfriend.
Yeah, she has a boyfriend she loves and is loved by, and her boyfriend's mother learns about this investigation and steps in and says, you know, to Cecily, your career and your choices that you have made are creating kind of a stain on your life and your reputation. And I don't want them to have an impact on my son's life and reputation. And so she tries to maneuver Cecily in, you know, out of the picture of this relationship. And Cecily, because she feels partially responsible for what has happened and guilty, steps out of the relationship for a while as a way of, well, she sees it as a kind of loving gesture. And to say more might give away the ending. But
Well, and not to give away the ending, but I don't know, is Santosh, does he overreact in this a little bit?
You know, he needed to overreact for the plot. Let's say
sure.
That.
Okay. That makes sense.
No, I mean, I think that he feels, you know, Cecily is not someone who reveals her emotions very easily. And he's this very intelligent, attractive guy who also just puts all of his feelings out there. And she is more guarded in hers. And I think he feels like, you know, why didn't you talk to me about this? Why did you act on your own? And so I don't really think that he overreacts necessarily. I think he kind of stands up for himself in a way.
Stephen McCauley is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the new novel is You Only Call When You're in Trouble. It is published by Holt. I think the last time we had you on was for My Ex-Life. When you look at this novel and your past work, how do you think you have progressed as far as subject matter and even in writing of what interests you?
Well, I hope that this book is comedic. I hope that it gives a certain kind of pleasure to readers. That's always my goal. But at the same time, I think there's maybe a little bit more melancholy in this book than in some of my earlier novels. And I think I'm becoming a little bit more, I don't know, comfortable entering the consciousness of characters who are a little bit different than I am, like Cecily, who is a 34-year-old woman, and, you know, Dorothy, who's a very different type of person than I am.
When you think of writing that character of Cecily, what was the challenge in that, in getting that voice right to you?
Well, you know, she is an academic, and I've been teaching for 35 years, so there were certainly pieces of her experience that were familiar to me. The generational component was perhaps the biggest challenge for me. I had to make a plot point of the fact that she was off social media, for example, because I just didn't want to deal with that because that's not a big part of my life. And I think it is a big part of a lot of people of her age, the lives of a lot of people of her age. So,
but that didn't take away, like, I didn't find that unbelievable. I understand people, especially in her position, of why they would be off social media.
You know, it's interesting, Joe, is as I said, I've been teaching for 35 years and my students really live on social media as far as I can tell. And I teach creative writing classes and social media almost never shows up in their fiction. And I don't have any reason for that or any, ideas about why that is, but it really is true. They almost never write about it.
That's really interesting, since for so many of them, it's such a large part of their life.
Yeah. And I think there's a kind of awkwardness to putting it in fiction because it's secondhand communication and so on. And I mean, a lot of people have done it very effectively. I don't know. I like to think that they're trying to take a break from it almost in their imaginations.
When you think of this story and it really does start off with Cecily, and then we're introduced to Tom and that relationship, and Tom becomes, as I think you've said, and I think is true, is the center of the novel, because it all revolves around him and the decisions that he's making. But he's dealing with his own issues, but he's taking these other issues really seriously and thoughtfully, which I thought was beautiful.
Yeah, as I've gotten older, I have been more responsible for caretaking of people in my life. My parents years ago, they're both dead now, but and other people who are a little bit older than I am, who are having health problems and so on. And it's difficult to be a caretaker, obviously, and it absorbs your life in a way that's not always welcome. But at the same time, there's something really beautiful about it and satisfying and even a little bit addictive. There's a problem in front of you. You usually know what is needed, and you can make someone's life a little bit better by, sometimes doing very simple tasks. And I wanted to convey some of that through Tom.
One of the questions I was thinking of as I was reading about this character is this guy just really a good person who cares and is doing the right thing, or is just really capable of being totally zen and let's look around and see how we can make this situation a bit more stable?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both, I think it's and there's a line in the book, I can't remember exactly what it is, to be honest, but it's something about being nice as a quality that is encouraged in women and then exploited and kind of condemned in men. This is my experience. Okay, if you ask most women, are you a nice person? They would say, I'm not nice enough. And most men would say, I'm too nice, because being nice is considered a kind of weakness in men, I think. And I think Tom feels that his, just being kind of a sympathetic person who is willing to help other people is exploited a little bit and is almost a disadvantage for him.
And the other interesting thing I thought about this character is that you remind us a few times that he's having his own troubles. He's having his own work troubles. He's also trying to keep he's at the end of his career, and he's, as you say, he's working toward retirement, and yet all this stuff has come up, and he's trying to figure out there are some pressures that are put on him and his job, and hey, who needs that?
Yeah, he's an architect who specializes in small spaces and tiny houses. And he has an opportunity to build what he thinks of and has some confirmation that, in fact, it is his masterpiece. As he says, his last chance at, leaving a footprint on the dying planet. And he really wants this to happen. At the same time, I think he's questioning, gee, is it greedy of me to at this point in my life to want to, have this kind of a professional accomplishment, or should I just bow out gracefully? And to be honest, that's something that I wrestled with at times. Is it unseemly at a certain point in life to still be ambitious? Like look at the criticism that someone like Madonna takes. Not that I'm comparing myself to Madonna, but you know, part of that is obviously sexism, but part of it I think is like, hey, you're in your 60s. Why don't you just step down and go gently into this good retirement? And Tom is wrestling with some of those feelings, I think.
And again, without giving much away, there in a chair not too far from where Tom sits is someone who is ready to take his job and ready to take his pretty much his entire profession and move on.
Yes, that is the story of life. There is always someone sitting in the chair next to you who's like ready to take that position. And he feels like, gee, maybe it's greedy of me not to get up off the chair and let him, you know, take his place. Because as he says, you know, it's also someone who hasn't destroyed the planet and brought about a climate crisis is a little bit more, you know, now it's time to let someone else do this job. So.
The ending is so satisfying, and the conclusion of where these characters land. Was that easy for you to achieve, or did that come naturally through the writing process?
You know, it somewhat came naturally through the writing process. It honestly was a surprising ending to me. I didn't think it was going to end where it ended. But as I was writing, it just kind of took on an inevitability. And that's really the most satisfying aspect of writing for me when that happens, where you're not wedging something to fit an outcome that you want, but you just kind of let yourself go with where the writing takes you. And that's what happened with the ending of this for me. I don't seem to be capable of like just kind of big happy endings where everything wraps up neatly, because I just feel that's not the way life works. So I wanted to leave a little bit of ambiguity on some of these storylines and also kind of a happy ending that has with it realistic, you know, traces of sadness.
Do you know where the writing will take you now?
Yeah, you know that I have typically taken a long break in between books, and with this book, maybe this is because I'm getting a little older now. And you know, as soon the day I turned this in to my editor, I began working on another book, and I thought, gee, I think maybe I'd like to try something very different. So, it's set in the 1970s with a character who is in his early 20s, which would be the age that I was at that period of time. So I'm giving it a whirl. We'll see where it goes.
The new novel is You Only Call When You're in Trouble. The book is published by Holt. Stephen McCauley, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. Always a delight to speak with you. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thanks so much, Joe. It was a great fun talking to you.
A delight. Be well. Again, Stephen McCauley will be part of the Spencertown Academy's Festival of Books, celebrating its 19th season this Labor Day weekend. Stephen will speak at 1 p.m. on Sunday afternoon. SpencertownAcademy.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.